Oh, do you have a second microphone?
Yeah,
Excellent,
we
because
can hear
there's
the
two of
question
us
maybe.
speaking. Perfect.
Okay, gentlemen, it's time for an exciting presentation. Sorry, couldn't resist. And Carl will lead it and will be assisted by Eric, who gets to wave a mic around. Isn't that great?
Excellent. Is that a good volume? Okay, before we start talking, I want to make sure that everyone knows that Bedale's giving a great talk about rockets. And if you thought that's what you're coming to, it's in another room. I'm sure it's a wonderful talk, and it'd be more fun than listening to us. But anyway, my name is Carl Wirth. I work for Red Hat. And Eric?
My name is Eric Anholt. I work for Intel on the 2D and 3D graphics drivers.
So we're going to talk today about some X acceleration stuff. I hope most of you are familiar with the X window system or have used it at one time in the past. And We're going to talk. So I want to talk about first of all some of the graphics, and I've got a really exciting slide. I was working on some eye candy. I put it together for this next slide. If you want to see how much X graphics can truly rock? Check this out. Excellent. So this, what's that? Yeah. Oh yeah, the X calc. Okay. So this is the venerable, I actually got this image last night. I Googled for X Windows System on Google Image Search, and this was one of the first page hits, the Wikipedia entry for X Windows System. This is what it shows. Is that embarrassing? Anyway, when the X Windows System, what's that? Ooh, X-Size. Yeah, see, we could improve this. The calculator and X-Size. Man, we have a complete Windows System. That's nice. Okay. So what I want to say about this, the reason I'm showing you this, this is a good demonstration of the core rendering primitives that were originally specified in the X render in the X window system. The core primitives include things like text and the fonts all lived on the server side at the time. We've got filled polygons like here, and we even have these lovely, in a manner of speaking, arcs and straight lines, none of which have anti-aliasing, there's no alpha blending, there's none of the things that you would associate with a modern desktop. So what's happened, let's see, so what we're talking about today is how to make graphics go fast and how to do acceleration. So first of all, I want to talk about, with the understanding of that's what graphics used to look like. We have non-anti-aliased lines, we've got solid fills, we've got these bitwise raster operations. You can do ands and ors and xors because, I don't know, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And that's what xlib provided originally. So today, of course, the primitives are very different, and I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to jump ahead to XAA. XAA stands for X Acceleration Architecture, and it was a mechanism for specific drivers to implement functionality to accelerate the core rendering operations that we saw before. So you could make your driver do various operations very fast, such as you could do
Bresenham
lines that are non-anti-aliased, and you could do them really fast. And at the time, there was actually, it made a lot of graphics hardware actually did have direct support for doing things like Bresenham lines, had this 2D functionality. In today's graphics chips, specific 2D functionality of that historical nature has either shrunk or disappeared entirely. It doesn't even exist anymore. And yet, for a long time, we've had this XAA acceleration architecture geared entirely for drawing stuff that we don't draw at all anymore. Today's applications do alpha blending and a lot of image compositing. And so XAA wasn't helping that at all. Keith Packard recognized this, and he had an alternate X server, the portion. Well, I got to apologize. Keith didn't have very exciting naming strategies, so his driver interface was called K-Drive, and the acceleration architecture was called KAA. That's not why we love and honor Keith, is for his naming. But anyway, so when Keith did K-Drive, he found that he could throw away all of the acceleration for things like Bresenham lines and things because they weren't helping applications. Applications were putting the entire picture together the way they wanted in spite of the rendering operations and then just sending the whole image across to the X server. So all that was really needed to get a very well-functioning X server was two rendering operations, and that was a solid fill and a copy, so that you could take a region and fill it to a single color very fast, and that you could copy contents from one part to another. So you could scroll your windows quickly and things like that. And if you had those two rendering operations, things worked reasonably well. I'm spending way too much time talking about history here. But anyway, Keith also invented something, recognizing that the applications were trying to draw things that the core rendering system wasn't supporting. He invented a new extension for the X server called the X Render extension. And it provided support, and I've got a slide about this. It was back here, wasn't it? Here we go. Here are some of the primitives that the X Render extension provides. It provides image compositing, so that you can blend one image on top of another. With various alpha levels. The font support gets ripped out of the X server and is now implemented on the client side. And it does trapezoid rasterization. And we have a library now, which is the Cairo graphics library, which actually computes trapezoids for you. And so you can get, easily draw Bezier curves and get nice paths. And the render extension also has gradients. A lot of the things that applications actually want to do. So the idea of implementing the render extension was to give clients direct support for the things they actually wanted to draw, and then we could implement accelerated support for these inside the drivers. So when Keith first came up with the render extension, he did a pure software implementation of the render extension. I think he did it in about an afternoon. And that code's been around ever since, and that's been for a long time. That's when people use the render extension, that's what they're getting, is this very correct but not very fast software rendering code. That was never the intent of that code was only to be fast enough that people could actually use this, but it was meant to be replaced by accelerated support directly in the drivers. So that's what happened with KAA. Eventually, was it you, Eric? Eric added other support. Like I said originally, Keith had the two hooks, solid fill and copy. Eric went ahead and added support into KAA for doing the various other render operations. For example, doing composite, where you could actually blend and scale and rotate images and things like that.
KAA also made one other advancement over XAA. With XAA, you had this notion of a rectangular area of memory that you stored not just your front buffer in, but also all of your off-screen pix maps, anything that you were preparing to copy to the screen. The problem was that they never really came up with a policy for how to manage that memory. So you just sort of, when you made a new pix map, you put it in there and kicked somebody else out, and then you never managed it beyond that. There was. It was hard to find, but it was there. So there was no real management of this memory. It was just sort of by luck you might still be in the memory manager, and if not, then you are all software all the time. So KAA came along and said, well, we also need to manage this memory. We need to, when we want to accelerate an operation, have our pixmap in memory that we can accelerate from, that is on the graphics card's local memory. And we need to be able to decide when to move it out of that memory when we're trying to do a software operation.
So once KAA had these various hooks in it so that drivers could actually accelerate the render extension, it was seen as a very useful thing. And people said, wait, well, that's a pretty fancy thing. I wish I had that in my X server. And no one was running KAA, so no one was running KDrive. People wanted this in the standard X386 server at the time. So Zach Rusin went ahead and ported the Keith's acceleration architecture into the standard X386 today, the standard Zorg server, and that became EXA, or EXA, or Eric's acceleration architecture. And again, we're not that good at naming, sorry. So with EXA, we have the capability inside the X server for a driver to implement support for the things that are for all of the render extension. And again, I think in today's world, the only really significant user of the render extension is the Cairo graphics library. But we do have a lot of people using the Cairo Graphics Library. Mozilla is switching, with Firefox 3, is switching all of its rendering to go through Cairo. GNOME and GTK do all the rendering through Cairo. I don't know what Qt's doing, but I guess Qt might have separate hooks into the render extension. So at the end of the day, with a modern desktop, all rendering should be going through the render extension, and if you're still using XAA, you're just going to lose entirely, because the acceleration primitives there don't support any of the operations. And so what the server has to do is copy, anytime you want to render something, it says, oh, your driver doesn't support that, I will copy out of video memory, I'll do the rendering with Keith's slow software, and get the compute the new result, and then I'll push it back out to video memory. And the worst part of that is that read from video memory. Hardware, video hardware is designed in such a way that you can push data to it very quickly, but there are no fast paths for getting data back over the AGP bus, for example.
It's about 20 megabytes a second if you're lucky.
Compared to the write speed is
hundreds.
Yeah, there's been a dramatic asymmetry there. It's getting better recently, but basically any time you have to read back from the video hardware, you've totally lost. And since when you're image blending, the new result always depends on the previous result. Anytime you fall back, you're going to lose in a big way. And so there was a time. So one of the big challenges with EXA was dealing with exactly that issue. Sometimes you do need to fall back because your driver doesn't have a particular support. Maybe your hardware doesn't support the operation you need to do. Or maybe you also have the issue of managing how many pixmaps you can fit into the video card memory, and you have to push them back and forth. So you have this migration strategy, and I'm going to let Eric talk a little more about migration.
Yeah, I spent quite a while working on the migration strategy because it's kind of hard. We have some pixmaps which are relatively long-lived. They're going to have the same operations done on them over and over. And then we also have these pixmaps that are very short-lived, things like when you're drawing text, you make a pixmap that contains a glyph. Then you paint that onto a temporary pixmap to accumulate glyphs together. Then you composite that temporary pixmap into your destination. So we had to be very careful with these migration heuristics to not move things back into software rendering at the wrong time, which would eat that performance cost of waiting for any previous acceleration to finish, and then doing that 10 megabytes a second read back out, and then starting a new set of acceleration operations. So we spent a lot of time on this and tried to come up with a bunch of clever strategies for the migration heuristics. What it ended up coming down to, though, was that we went to the strategy of always migrating. If you can do it in hardware, move it to hardware. If you can't do it in hardware, move it back out to system memory. And this was mostly working. It wasn't too bad. It was the best thing we had seen on cards like Radeon, where you have card local memory. But we realized that for the Intel hardware, we could probably do better.
Yeah, and that's about when I came into this picture. I had been I've been working on the Cairo library for several years, and as Mozilla and other people started using the Cairo library, they found that it was really slow. And we did a lot to fix a lot of performance bugs that I had written into Cairo. We got a lot of those out. And so the library itself is pretty quick. It does include a copy of the same slow image compositing code that Keith wrote for the X server, and that's now lives in what's known as the Pixman library. So anytime Cairo has to do its own fallbacks, it goes through that same software rendering paths. And as we talked about before, you never really want to be doing that if you can avoid it. The idea is you can do much better if you can actually use the hardware to accelerate your operations. And so eventually we got to a point where people profiling Cairo applications weren't seeing Cairo function calls at the top of the profile. So that made me feel good. We sped things up. But things still weren't going fast. Instead, the X server ended up at the top of the profile. And often it was doing these either the slow reads from the video hardware, or was spending a lot of time doing image compositing. And about this same time, Intel came out with a new graphics architecture that the 965 architecture, well, I guess the 965 isn't the architecture. Does it have a name? I don't know.
Gen 4.
Intel's Gen 4 architecture, and the 965 is the first model. And it supported a lot more. We recognized that we had the capability to really implement everything that the render extension needs, and we should theoretically be able to get to a point where we're never falling back. We're just doing everything with the hardware. And that seemed a very interesting thing to do. At about the same time, Intel also became much more cooperative, thanks to a lot of hard work from Keith Packard and others, with the free software community. I've been working at Red Hat, like I said, and Intel, through an NDA with Red Hat, was able to give me and other Red Hat developers the documentation that we needed to do some of this development. So I came into this with the desire to get the X server going faster so that it could really show off Cairo a little better.
Okay, so we should talk about what exactly the graphics device looks like. It has the same 2D operations we're familiar with, solid fills and copy area, and it has the 3D side of the hardware as well, which basically we want to use for doing blending of textures onto a destination surface. This is something that any hardware can do, but since the 90s, but for us, we just happen to have this hardware that has fragment programs where any sort of blending operation we might feel like doing, we can express. The card has no local memory. All of its memory that it addresses goes through a GART, which is the HEP aperture, and it goes through a set of page tables, gets remapped into system memory. What this means for us is that we don't have this hard-to-access memory on the other side of a bus. It's all local to the CPU, more or less. So some of our costs are different with the Intel hardware compared to the old Radeon, where we had to worry about 10 megabytes a second reads if we wanted to read anything. The aperture reads are still expensive, but on the other hand, GART binding is cheap. So now instead of trying to read something through the aperture if we want to read it, we can just unbind it from the GART and read those pages directly with the CPU.
This is a curious thing. The idea of having this unified memory space where the CPU and the video memory are actually the same thing rather than being separate is actually something that's done as a cost-saving measure in terms of the hardware design. As far as I understand, it's just a lot cheaper to not put a bunch of dedicated video memory onto the graphics card. But in spite of that, it's actually a very interesting thing for some of the reasons Eric mentioned. It lets us avoid some of the really difficult migration problems, and we can actually take advantage of this approach to do to get some good acceleration support, because the fallbacks suddenly can be much cheaper. Other graphics platforms, such as new Radeon, also provide some even when they do have dedicated video memory, they have some from what I understand, some capability to do some similar kinds of operations. Not something I'm familiar with. I've never looked at that hardware. So we want to talk about, that's really history. What we want to talk about now is some of the recent work we've done, and not just us, but Dave Ehrle and who else has been hacking on this stuff? Michelle Danzer and a lot of people have been doing a lot of great work, both in the driver for the 965 and in underlying levels such as the DRM and these various kernel drivers. I don't think we'll go into a lot of technical details on those, but we'll talk about some of the benefits that have come from that work. So
the TTM. We've had this problem with our graphics memory management. You have this chunk of card memory, or maybe a chunk of card aperture space that you can allocate memory into. And so we would divide it up with one memory manager. We would say, okay, we're going to use this piece of the memory for 3D. We're going to use this piece of the memory for 2D. We're going to use this piece of memory for XV. We're going to stick cursors here, etc. So we divide up the memory a bunch of times. And then within each component of the system, you would have another memory allocator, which would stick a bunch of textures in your 3D, stick a bunch of pixmaps in your 2D. And so this was fragmenting our memory and resulting in more migration than we needed. So to try to merge some of this together, and also for some 3D features, the TTM was implemented, which is a kernel-based memory manager. So now when anybody, whether they're the X server or the 3D clients, wants to have a bunch of memory in the graphics device, they call the kernel, say, allocate a buffer object. With those, we can map them and put data into them and unmap them. We can associate relocation with them and say, this buffer points to this buffer, and then we can send them to the hardware and execute those buffers with all of their dependencies. From that, we get a fence back out, which is a little marker, and we can wait on that and say, okay, tell me when the rendering that I asked for is finished. This is the basic idea of the TTM. So now we have a single memory manager for everything in the system, every graphics operation.
So the interesting thing then is to take this ESA acceleration architecture and the i965 driver and to take advantage of TTM to implement all of these various render operations. So when I started with looking at the i965, I sat down with these several hundred pages of documentation and the existing driver and the state it was in, and just tried to figure out what was going on and what was happening. At that point, the driver wasn't using TTM for any of its setup. It was, I don't want to go into too many of the technical details about what it's doing, but it definitely wasn't making efficient use of the hardware. It was repeatedly setting up the same state over and over on every operation. And and when I talk about an operation, a common thing, so one of the things that hurt the most is rendering a span of glyphs. You're just drawing some text. So you might have, I don't know, a full span in your web browser window. Maybe you have 60 characters that are sent to the X server in a single operation. I want to draw these glyphs. And the way it comes into the driver is you get a single composite operation for every single one of those glyphs. So you, one by one, the driver needs to do a compose operation for each one. And so what the driver was doing was it would emit dozens and dozens of commands to initialize all the desired state into the graphics chip and then execute this one command, which was, you know, a handful of vertices. And then when the next composite operation came in, it would start over and do the same thing. Not only that, though, when it went to start over, it was going to use the same video memory location to set up all its state. But that state was still being read by the hardware. So what it says, okay, I better wait until that last composite operation is done and let it drain completely out, and then I'll do all the same setup again. Well, if any of you know even a little bit about how modern 3D graphics chips are implemented, they're very deep pipelines. The way you're supposed to get high performance out of them is to do whatever setup you need to do and then to stream as many vertices as you can through them. So if you're playing a game like, I don't know, one of these various 3D games that I don't play, what they actually do at the hardware level, they're setting up these various textures, and then they're just, and the transformations and the other things needed to do, and then they just stream all the vertex data, which references the various textures, and boom, it all goes. So if you compare that to what was happening in the i965, we were doing all this setup, and then for what we just passed, like, maybe three or six.
One rectangle.
Yeah, one rectangle, just a few vertices. And then we'd say, okay, now let's wait for all that deep pipeline to drain again, and then we'll start over again. It was just horrible. It's not performing well at all. And so at that point, people were seeing some really big slowdowns from switching from XAA to EXA. And they said, well, this was supposed to be some great acceleration architecture, and the render extension was supposed to be great, and Cairo was supposed to be great, but when I switch to it, all of the text rendering gets really slow. And in 2D graphics environments, which is what we're talking about, you know, the 3D acceleration is actually a separate thing for 3D applications. But in 2D graphics, text is a very important primitive. It's what happens the most, and it really needs to perform well. I did what I could thrashing around with the driver and improved a few things. There were a few things the X server was doing that was preventing us from doing any better. It was, for example, pinning every glyph image into system memory rather than letting it go into video memory. And so we have the glyphs pixmap work to fix that. And then Dave Ehrle converted the entire i965 composite operations, these are the various render extensions, over to use TTM and to use batch buffers. And so at this point, so it was a big rewrite of the driver. And to give you an idea of what was going on in performance, we were seeing, on my machine, I was seeing that if I used pure software rendering, I could get somewhere in the range of 200 to 250,000 glyphs per second with just a pure software implementation. Instead, if I use the EXA driver to do the text rendering, I'd get something like 50 to 70,000 glyphs per second. So it was a big slowdown. Well, after Dave Ehrlich did his rewrite, I measured, and I was all the way to 700 glyphs per second. So we're supposed to be, and we'd love to be at the hundreds of thousands. I did one test with the X server. I said, well, if the driver could do the compose operation infinitely fast, and you still had all the software overhead to set everything up, how fast would the glyphs come out? And that comes out at about a million glyphs per second. So if the hardware were infinitely fast, we have enough overhead in the X server that we could never do any better than that. And it's actually pretty impressive that software is already at a quarter of that speed, at about 250,000 glyphs per second. But after Dave's initial rewrite to TTM, again, it was the promising stuff. It was important and great work. And he started with the approach of just doing the minimum to get it to be correct. And we got to start with 700 glyphs per second. The great thing about that is it gave us a lot of room to improve. So every week, I'm like, wow, another order of magnitude improvement.
10 times faster.
10 times faster again. I had these great status reports. My manager was loving it at work. I didn't say what the baseline was. Yeah, I made everything 10 times faster again. What else do I want to talk about there? Some of what I've been doing to do that. I said before that we were doing a lot of setup. Well, actually, so the order of operations, the first thing we would do is wait for the entire graphics pipeline to drain out. We do this sync operation to wait for it to go to a totally quiescent state. Then we do a whole lot of setup and stream a tiny number of vertices through. What we're doing now instead is as soon as the driver initializes, we do setup for every possible operation that can come through. The render extension is not that big. There's just about 12 different operators and these various different repeat modes, whether the operation extends or reflects or just goes to transparent. And so we were able to enumerate all the state needed for all of those different conditions and put those statically into the video hardware. So when a composite operation comes along, we can just compute an offset to the state that's already pre-computed and sitting in video memory and just use it rather than recreating it. So that was a big improvement. The second thing Eric did, for example, is rather than just streaming one vertex through, if we have several operations in a row that use the exact same state, we can accumulate all of those vertices into a single buffer, and then once we're forced to, actually send them all at once. So actually using the hardware the way it should be used. Anything else about what we've done? Like I said, a lot of boring technical details, but we want to show actually what we have to show for it. What time is this talk supposed to end? 4:30? Okay. We'll have time for questions. So this slide shows the result of this. So a lot of what, if you've read my blog over the last several months, and some of what I talked about today already, we took the Mozilla test case and saw what things does Mozilla really struggle with, and it's text. And so I spent a lot of time measuring text rendering. Now, text rendering, as it turns out, is about the most brutal thing you can do to hardware. We described you don't want to do these setup operations over and over. You want to be able to take advantage of a large operation, get the setup done once, and then stream a lot of vertices or a lot of pixels through the engine. But with text, you're doing a compose operation with one little 10 by 10 glyph image. It's a really tiny image, and then along comes the next one, and you've got to start over again. So that that really puts a strain on hardware. And what we have here, and this is the range of numbers I was talking about before, we saw that with XAA, these numbers we took this morning on Eric's laptop, we could get about 170,000 glyphs per second. His laptop's a lot
slower. It's a primarily software implementation. It has a very small bit of acceleration, but pretty much it's just doing a bunch of compositing in software.
Yeah, it's almost the exact same as if you just tell the X server to do it purely in software, not doing anything XAA, because these text primitives don't match the actual XAA text primitives. So the EXA and the new EXA, EXA is sort of the state of things before the work we've been talking about here today, the big rewrite and using TTM and using batch buffers and the state accumulation and things we talked about. So it took us down to about 50,000 glyphs per second, and we've recovered back up to about 120,000 glyphs per second. Now, at that point, and this is where we're at right now, we are seeing the GPU pegged at 100% utilization, which is good. We want the graphics hardware to be very busy. We're doing our job. But we're also seeing the CPU at 100% utilization. And that's wrong. We want it to not be doing anything at all, just sitting there waiting for the hardware to get done. Eric found out some kernel. Well, Eric's identified some of the problems, and we hope to fix them. We want to get as much get back, if not far beyond, at least match the here. You want to talk about some of those problems, or?
I was going to talk about it in future work.
We'll talk about that in future work. So the tech stuff is still a slowdown to some extent. I think very soon we'll have it at least reach parity. We have the potential for this to actually go a heck of a lot faster. This work isn't done yet. But the next slide's a little more interesting, a little more impressive. What we have here is the results of several different benchmarks. These came out of a program called RenderBench, which was written by Rasterman or Karsten. And he's for a while been frustrated with how slow the render extension is in the X server, because most often it's been a pure software implementation. And it's not very interesting to target it with a toolkit. So we have in the key, you'll see we have yellow, red, and green. And in the bars, you can't see the yellow stuff at all. Then we have normalized results here to XAA. So XAA gets a value of 1 in every one of these operations, and the scale means you can't see it at all. So EXA, when we started, was, I don't know, what is that, 20 to 30 times faster than XAA. And now that with the work we've done, we're up to 900 times faster than what XAA. So this is the stuff. This is stuff actually working. These various tests are blending one image onto another with an identity transformation. You're just doing a simple compose operation. This is scaling down by a factor of 2, scaling up by a factor of 2, and this one is scaling up by all kinds of different values to very large. And that's where you get the larger you scale things up, the bigger win you get. And you know, an operation like that, scaling a texture, is one of the things that the hardware is very, very good at, and we're actually taking advantage. And this is still the things that were penalizing us on the previous slide are also penalizing us here. They're just amortized quite a bit because we have larger operations than some smaller 10x10. So even this with future work should get better. So three orders of magnitude is already pretty good, but we'll see if we can do a little more. Demo. We can figure if something's 900 times faster, we should try to show that a little bit. So about 15 minutes ago, I was still writing slides, and I went to my friend Keith and said, Keith, we've got this, we just measured this great number of 900, could you write us a demo that would show it? And any of you who heard his lightning talk at the GNOME mini conference know that Keith's been working on his own language for the last 16 or 17 years. Called Nickel. There are, I think, 3 users of it so far, so that's exciting. And it's a great language. He was able to crank out this demo in just moments. So we have XAA first, or?
This is not quite XAA. This is no Excel.
Okay,
for the compositing operations, it's the same as XAA, but it doesn't have accelerated glyphs. I couldn't get XAA with acceleration to work because we've ignored it for the last 10 months to work on.
So we've configured the X server to do pure software rendering, and we... Let's make this. We can maximize that a little bit.
Oh, this is.
No, I was going to say that looks a little fast.
I showed you the after. Before.
We were supposed to do the before. Oh well. Kind of steal some thunder.
There we go. This
That's what we want to see. Okay, so this is what software rendering can do. And we are taking a, well, it's a jackass penguin, as it turns out. And it's got a lot of translucence. It's got a soft fade that we put together with the GIMP. And so it's being blended over the background as it's being spun around, as it's being scaled up and down. And it's actually pretty impressive that, software can do as well as it does. I mean, CPUs are amazing. What, you can throw a lot of really stupid instructions at them, and they can crank through them.
This is 100% CPU.
Yeah, 100% CPU utilization. That's
a little more than that. We're doing dual core running. 100% just for the X-ray.
And so anyway, now we want to show what, it can do when we turn on all the acceleration, which you might have seen before. We didn't maximize it. I mean, this is what it's all about. I mean, if you can't make a penguin spin around, what good's the next server? There we go. So, I mean, it's sort of like one of those GLX Gears demos where things are going faster than you can even see what's happening. So, yeah, it's at least obvious that it's going too fast. So that's good. That's where we want to be. Yeah. But that's Keith should have done that. No, I really appreciate Keith putting that together so we actually had something. We are zero bling kind of people. I stole your microphone. You can have it back. What's left from here?
So I had an epiphany last night. I'd been working for the last few weeks trying to get 3D performance to be better after I had just converted the 3D driver over to use TTM. And I had this weird effect where when I moved to using TTM, not just did my driver take up more time, but the application itself was taking up more CPU time. And I was completely CPU bound. The hardware was only 70% busy. I've been thinking about it for a few days, and I realized that what we were doing, we were flushing all of the caches on all of the CPUs every batch buffer. Actually, probably multiple times per batch buffer.
This is bad, by the way.
So all of that 4 megabytes of cache is really doing nothing for you.
And that's what's happening here in what you're watching. And that's, again, some of the reason. That's why the CPU was pegged in our text case, and we were down at the number of glyphs we are. So now that we know what the problem is, we're hoping that we can get rid of that cache flushing, and we should see some big improvements. Beyond that, I talked about how we enumerate as much static state as possible and reuse that. There's a lot of dynamic state that comes in to the composite operation. One of them is every time you have a source surface and a destination surface, you have to set up these surface state objects to describe these surfaces to the hardware. And that takes a small amount of setup. And what we're doing right now is recreating the surface state objects on every operation. So what will happen is, what's very common, is if you're rendering a lot of text to a destination, well, every compose operation is going to use that same destination. And as you render your text, there's a lot of glyphs that end up getting used over and over again. So you have both the source and the destination surface objects don't need to be regenerated all the time. We could cache them. So once we get our CPU down, CPU usage down from 100%, like I said, we're already at 100% GPU utilization. We're really telling the GPU to do more than it needs to. So we can get rid of some of that through caching. And then some of the really interesting work is to take advantage of the hardware to do more and more of what is capable through Cairo. For example, things like rendering gradients. A 965, Intel 965 could compute a gradient very quickly, but the Cairo code is stupidly using software to compute that right now. So we can, we're excited to get all the current problems out of the way and then start extending the set of supported render operations by the hardware. And I think that's most of what we had to say. We've got a few minutes for any questions. Oh my goodness, questions. Dave.
Can I just apply that TTM hardware to the destination? I had to do it on one file. Because it's not as complicated as it should be. My
That's right.
I just did 9 to 5.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
5 to 9 to 5 make so much
It doesn't have all of this state management. It doesn't have these extra state objects that you have to point to and manage. The 9.15, you just make a program, you dump it into the ring buffer, you come up with some program state, you dump it into the ring buffer.
It's
relatively straightforward, the 9.15 code.
The Gen 4 architecture from Intel is a total, totally new thing. And it's okay. I'll leave those to your imagination. So a lot of it, what that's meant is, yeah, a lot of the driver, the approaches used in the driver, the original 965 driver just sort of copied some approaches from the 915 and the older Intel drivers, and they really don't make sense anymore. You just really need to start over and do something totally different from scratch. And so that's why it's been trailing a little bit. And getting performance. But yeah, we've that's another. So we've been working with the hardest thing to program, and we've been focusing on the hardest operation, which is these tiny glyphs. Some of the other, like we said, bigger scaling operations already work really fast, and then some of the older graphics hardware, like 915, are already performing really well to the best of their ability. Another question, next. So on a 965, which we've been working on, we've got image scaling, image compositing. We've got that's really arbitrary transformations.
Filtering transformations.
Filtering rotations.
We have some limits on the transformations that we'll fix very soon.
So the things that are left on us are the next big one is gradients that we're not doing. And beyond that, the other things that will be, so once we have this GPU just screaming through all this stuff, the stuff that will be left in chiral profiles are tessellation of geometry and rasterization of trapezoids. Those are just two things that are done in software right now. That would be very interesting to try to get the hardware involved in those. So those are some other future directions. Excellent question. Oh, my goodness, Def. How do batch buffers work? So in the GPU, you have this ring that where you control, and there's privileged access to the ring. You issue commands it's a ring, so it's a circular buffer that you're issuing commands to, and the hardware is following through and executing them. And you have privileged there's various different privileged things that it requires. So only one thing can be right into the ring. One of the commands, though, that you can issue to the ring is a begin batch command. And instead of inserting the commands directly into the ring, you set up a buffer in video memory that has a bunch of your commands. And into the ring, you just say, oh, go off, please, and now execute this batch. And when it gets done, control then returns to the ring. So what that means is if you try to do all your driver implementation through just direct access to the ring, if you have a 2D client trying to do render acceleration, then you have a 3D program, they're both dealing with this ring, you have these, you have a lot of synchronization difficulty getting back and forth and managing the privilege control. And so instead now, so that's what we had before. We had the driver directly talking to the ring. Now we have kernel support where all the ring handling is done in the kernel driver. And what we end up doing in the X driver is to simply fill up these batch buffers and then hand them off to the lower level device driver where they actually get emitted. I don't know if I explained that very well.
That's pretty good.
It's probably totally wrong, too. Dave will tell you how rings really work later. OpenVG and render is an interesting question. So OpenVG, for those of you who don't know, is a 2D rendering specification that's come out of the Kronos group, the same group that gave us OpenGL. If you look at it, there's a lot of perhaps similarities with the Cairo interface, although the consensus I've seen is it's not easy to use. In particular, we have someone, Oyvind Kolas, who goes by Pippin. He's working for OpenHand. He has recently written an OpenVG backend for Cairo. So you can issue Cairo function calls. His backend turns them into OpenVG function calls. And then he's using an OpenVG implementation called Shiva VG. And I don't know if Shiva VG author is with us at the conference. I'd love to meet him. And that is currently translating to OpenGL. It sounds a bit like a house of cards to me, and there's some impedance mismatches at each level that end up making things difficult. one of the motivations for doing that kind of effort is the anticipation and the expectation of embedded devices coming with more direct OpenVG implementations. So one of the nice things you get with a rendering interface like Cairo is it can target the render extension, or it could target OpenVG now with Pippin's new backend, and your application won't have to change at all. So and also some of the stuff we've been doing, we've been focusing on the render extension inside the X server. The render extension could be implemented on top of OpenGL if that was a really compelling thing to do. We've found so far that we can get better control by just talking directly to the hardware.
One of the reasons we've been focusing on the render extension is that in the open source graphics world, our drivers aren't ready to let us do what Cairo wants using OpenGL. The main thing that we need here are frame buffer objects, things that you can render to and then use as a source to render from. We haven't done that until TTM came along. So OpenGL was really not an option for doing our Cairo acceleration. It may be that now that we've got TTM, now that we're getting OpenGL drivers that support frame buffer objects, we can look at OpenGL seriously for doing our Cairo hardware acceleration.
Interestingly,
but it's an open field still.
Yeah, interestingly, that was the biggest problem that Pippin's run into with OpenVG, is it also does not have support. A surface that you write to is simply that, something that you write to. You can't then read from it. And that's something that happens in Cairo all the time, is that you write to, you create one surface, then you use that as a pattern, as the source pattern for doing further rendering. So it's really limiting trying to map that onto an API that doesn't allow you to do that. Another question?
I was just wondering how about sharing.
Obviously, the code, we want to share as much through conferences like this. We share all the code, of course, under a very liberal license that is used by the entire X Window system. So anyone is free to take that code and use it for other purposes. The details of actually talking to the hardware are often very different from one platform to the next. So there's not a lot of direct code sharing. We identify common problems such as memory management and try to get the support and things like TTM to try to get those things solved. But a lot of the rest of the direct support has been pretty specific to the platform. For example, in the 965, a lot of this we've been is very specific to the 965, whereas a lot of the previous Intel models from 830 to 930 share a lot of code. So it really depends on the platform how much it differs from one to the next. I have none. That's an interesting question. Keith?
Right now, when you light up, as the current code is doing right now, it's lighting up the entire CPU and the entire GPU, so it's getting worse. With the goal of reducing CPU power consumption, the CPU power envelope is significantly larger than the GPU power envelope, which is to say the CPU going flat out consumes much more power than the GPU going flat out. So the goal here is by migrating computation from the CPU, where you're running general purpose processing hardware, to the GPU, where you're running very application specific hardware, we're going to have an overall reduction in power usage.
All right. I don't have numbers for the GPU, but in terms of CPU usage on Intel mobile hardware, at least, you're looking at potentially a difference of up to, depending on whether it's a low voltage or a normal mobile processor, up to something like 30 watts difference between an idle CPU and a fully loaded CPU. So I'm pretty certain the GPU can never get up to that sort of level of power consumption.
Not even close.
I think we're out of time, so thank you very much.